The field of mental health counseling is growing rapidly, and Richmond Graduate University can equip you with everything you need as a licensed professional counselor while integrating your faith into your clinical practice. Programs are offered in Atlanta, Chattanooga, and online. Apply today at richmont.edu. That's richmont.edu.
I'm Earlonne Woods.
I'm Nigel Poor. We're the hosts and creators of Ear Hustle from PRX's Radiotopia.
Ear Hustle is a show about life inside prison, but it's not your typical prison podcast.
In this next season, we've got stories about the objects people keep inside their prison cells,
about residents in a women's prison who say they want to stay there,
and the most beautiful prison garden. Earlonne, I will never forget it.
Ear Hustle, stories about life on the inside told by those who live it.
Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts.
We've got quite a spread on the political breakfast this week. I'm Dennis O'Hare. I'll be your host with opinions from the left and the right. Students from all over the state walked out of class this week to remember the victims of the Parkland shooting and to protest gun violence. But are Georgia lawmakers getting that message? A Democrat won a congressional seat in Pennsylvania in a district that President Trump won by double digits back in 2016. We'll look at what that could mean for the midterms here in Georgia. And it's March Madness. I'm referring, of course, to the final weeks of the state legislative session. As the clock ticks down, what surprises or buzzer beaters might we see under the gold dome? So pull up a seat at the table with me here today again, Republican strategist Brian Robinson and Democratic strategist Theron Johnson. Gentlemen, greetings.
Happy Friday. Good to be here, Dennis.
All right, let's start with what has been buzzing all around the nation's capital, and I'm sure is happening in Republican circles here in Georgia, Brian, the results of the Pennsylvania 18th District congressional race, a district which won't even exist in a few months. And yet Democrat Connor Lamb took a district that President Trump won easily. He defeated Rick Saccone of Pennsylvania State Legislature, for whom the president campaigned twice. Now, is there a message at all for Georgia Republicans, particularly in the congressional districts, which have been drawn very tightly to favor a big Republican majority in the delegation?
Interestingly, many of the Republican incumbents who are safe and will be safe this November did draw Democrat challengers this time when oftentimes they go largely unopposed. And I think Democrats are highly energized. They are active and they are putting themselves out there and on the ballot, and that's usually the sign that a wave is coming. When you start losing special elections like this, that's also a sign of a wave coming. Now, in the Pennsylvania race, let's take a look, first of all, from the Republican point of view. You had a district where the incumbent, who had to resign in disgrace, was involved in a sex scandal, had demanded his mistress have an abortion when he was a pro-life.
And this was not Saccone, just to clarify. This
was not, the incumbent who had been in office before and had to resign in disgrace. And who, by the way, I was on Capitol Hill at the same time as him. He's just a real jerk. He was one of those kind of guys who, like, every 6 months had complete staff turnover. That's always a sign of somebody who's bonkers. And two, you had a Democrat who was running with very conservative points of view. He was very moderate on guns, said he wouldn't vote, he would vote against Nancy Pelosi. So there are some extenuating circumstances, but Republicans do have a problem. We are consistently losing 20 points in districts that we've held in previous cycles.
And you're particularly doing it, in this case anyway, and in some other elections, in the suburbs among suburban white women.
That's right. It was Allegheny County in the outskirts of Pittsburgh where the Democrat Lamb really ran up his numbers. And that, you know, the Republican won in the more rural areas of the district, but not by a big enough margin. And then lost in the suburbs. So those should be Republican territories. We should be concerned. It doesn't mean that it's going to trickle down to Georgia and we're going to have some wave here. I don't see that. I do see Democrats having some marginal success here, picking off some seats that were trending to them anyway. But I think nationally, the Democrats are set for a good year.
So is there a message, though, for Republicans in the suburbs here?
You know, I think we've got to be serious about making sure that people have access to health care in all parts of the state. We have to have plans for making sure that those groups that have felt left behind for the last 30 years think that there's hope for the American dream. We've got to do something on school safety and speak to those needs. We need to continue to have conservative solutions. We cannot just be a party of, oh, well, they're for Nancy Pelosi. We've got to be for something that provides real solutions.
And Theron, this Democrat, Connor Lamb, won partly by saying he would oppose, would not vote for Nancy Pelosi as Speaker. But even beyond that, does this say to Democrats, if you want to get beyond your primary voters and win general elections, you have to moderate yourselves a little bit?
Well, Connor Lamb was an interesting candidate because he reminded me a lot of John Barrow, who used to represent mm-hmm. Georgia's 12th congressional district.
And is now running for Secretary of State.
And because what he did so uniquely is that he did have a Democratic small base within that district that definitely voted for him. But back to the point of the suburban women, I've said many, many times that I believe across the country, but especially here in Georgia, there's an enormous amount of disaffected Republican women who voted for President Trump and now have a lot of buyer's remorse. They don't like the way that this president is governing our country. But what's very frightening for the Republican Party, to Brian's point, this is supposed to be a safe Republican seat. This is supposed to be a place where no Democrat, whether it's very moderate to conservative Democrat like Connor Lamb or even anybody who has a D beside their name, is supposed to win in this district. So the good news for Democrats is that we see that this blue wave is definitely building all across the country. But I would caution us to not get too content, because this was an election that, as Brian pointed out, the person who was the predecessor in this seat had a lot of bad things happen, a lot of negative things happen. So the Republican had President Trump come to the district 4 days out. And that was a clear signal to me that they were in trouble, because if you really listen to what the president talked about, he only spent 10% of his time, maybe 15% of his time, actually talking about the candidate that he was there to represent. Instead, he took that
opportunity. And he also told him the pressure's on. In other words, telling him, look, if you lose, it's your fault, not mine.
Right. And I think that what he was saying to his Trump base is that stick with me, don't give up on me. If we lose this seat, it's going to be your fault. So fast forward to what you're saying about Speaker Pelosi. I truly believe that Speaker Pelosi, former Speaker Pelosi, has done an enormous job of really moving the party forward in Washington. When she was Speaker and now is Minority Leader, she represents a certain sector of the Democratic Party. I think she's done a phenomenal job at that. However, there is a growing population of people within the Democratic Party that think that the establishment in Washington, particularly former Speaker Pelosi gets blamed for this, is not speaking to this new progressive movement that we're seeing across the country. So you have a combination of a new progressive movement of people in our party who don't necessarily align themselves with Speaker Pelosi, coupled with disaffected Republican suburban women who don't like the way that this president is governing.
Two different sets of people who feel left out. But are their interests the same? Can the Democrats get them together to form a coalition?
Well, therein lies the challenge for us. And there's a lot of polling going on right now. There's a lot of focus groups. I know right now, as we are sitting here, there's a group of Democrats and progressives getting together in Washington to really do a really clear study on the race in Pennsylvania to really figure out how he won. But here's why I would caution us. When you look at places like Georgia, when 13 out of the 14 congressional seats are contested by Democratic challengers, and we look at District 6 in Georgia and District 7, I do think there's striking similarities between the disaffected Republican women in the Gwinnett areas and the Fulton areas that are going to resemble some of the same discontent, some of the same frustration that people went to the polls and voted for the Republican in that race. So what Democrats have got to do is that we've got to continue to talk about job creation, education, and health care, make it fair, make it equitable to everyone. But also, we know that we have a very unpopular president who clearly has taken a big loss in this race.
Let me say, I think it's great that Theron thinks that Pelosi's too conservative for the new progressive movement of the Democratic Party. I do think that maybe she's too old. I think she has a bad face for the party. She's been there too long. And the fact is, she does represent the new progressive movement. It is just as left-wing and just as unrepresentative of middle America as she is. And there's a reason why Republicans use her as the bogeyman in the races all across the country, because she is toxic. She is extreme. She is polarizing. And Theron can rightly argue that Trump is polarizing. He is. And he's able to excite his base. the problem the Democrats face is that she excites their base. She's an excellent fundraiser for them. But nationally, she's a terrible face for the party because so many people find her distasteful.
To be continued, obviously, these races are coming up. But coming up in the immediate future, March 24th, the March for Our Lives, which is another protest against gun violence. It is scheduled for Liberty Plaza, that big new gathering area right behind the Capitol. Theron, I'll start with you. Governor Nathan Deal, Brian's old boss, was able to work out an arrangement to give them permission to use the plaza on that Saturday when it had been denied before because of the hours that the plaza was available.
You know, I want to really just congratulate and just say how great it was to see this week all of these students across the country participate in a National Walkout Day, because you saw a movement that we've talked about on this show, that young people are fed up. They're tired of going to funerals when they're burying their peers. And we've got to do something about gun control. But at the same time, you can actually protect American lives and protect gun rights at the same time. So I want to commend them. I was so excited just to see these young people and parents all across the country coming together, especially here in Georgia, to protest peacefully. Now, I want to commend Governor Deal for basically working through this process. Let me tell you this. It was going in a wrong direction.
Well, a federal lawsuit had been filed by Decatur Democratic Representative Mary Margaret Oliver.
Yes.
Who knows her way around the law, former chair of the Judiciary
Committee. I definitely want to, you know, we call her MMO, but, you know, definitely want to congratulate and commend State Representative Mary Margaret Oliver as well, because had Governor Deal not stepped in, and you see a governor now who's not running for public office ever again saying, you know what, guys, we still don't need to create boundaries and barriers for people to cross the peacefully protest. And so this was something that had elevated all the way into the attorney general's office. But I want to commend Governor Deal for stepping in. However, the fact that these groups have got to go through all of these hurdles, the fact that these groups are being denied on this particular issue, it's still very frustrating, because we've got to have an open and honest conversation about how do we protect American lives? How do we prevent people who have mental illness or people who have the intent to harm because of hatred in their heart, American people? And we cannot give them access to guns. And so I want to commend the governor for doing the right thing. But at the same time, I want people to realize that it took a long time for us to really have these groups come together in Liberty Plaza, which is a place that Democrats, Republicans, Independents, Liberals, Progressives, Conservatives, they all come together to protest. And so this is a place that's open to the public, and we should not make them have to jump through an enormous amount of bureaucracy to have a peaceful protest.
And Brian, while the arrangement has been made for this march, that policy about weekends and off hours at Liberty Plaza remains, and so does the lawsuit against it, as we're speaking at this point anyway.
I do think that you're seeing the realization that we have some problems with the setup. We have seen time and time again Governor Nathan Deal step in when there was an image problem for the state, stand up, take a stand, and reverse course. You've seen him do it time and time again. And that's leadership. And he really averted what could have been an embarrassment for the state by letting this happen. And the reforms are this. Right now, you have to have a constitutional officer sponsor your event. So right now, they're all Republicans, which is fine with me, probably not so fine with Theron. So Democrat groups have to go get a sponsor from a Republican, which puts the Republican in a politically tough spot. They can be for the First Amendment, but to their voters, it looks like they're endorsing this, you know, Democratic left-wing viewpoint that is part of the protest. So there needs to be a more Democratic way where everybody
small
has access
Democratic,
to it.
Right?
The reason, yeah, small D Democrat. But the reason why that rule was in place was they had to limit the access to it so that we didn't run up overtime costs with security and other expenses that come along with managing a large group. And that is going to be part of the state government's responsibility. But I do think we can find a responsible, sustainable, cost-effective way to protect the First Amendment. That's why that Liberty Plaza is there.
But one of the things that's so, you know, baffling to me, and Brian and his conservative friends, they like to say this a lot, is that we're all about the Constitution. You know, we don't want to take away people's First Amendment right to protest or peacefully protest or have freedom of speech. And what Republicans in the legislature are doing is doing exactly the opposite and taking away groups ability to basically express their right of to freedom of speech. And so what is happening, Dennis, is that there's a cherry picking going on, because Republican groups and conservative groups, they don't, you know, they get their permits approved a little easier than some of the groups that some of the Republicans don't agree with. And I think that what we've seen in election year is that, to Brian's point, he just said this, is that Republicans are scared to go on the record, go on the written record for being a signer or being a person who actually will endorse certain groups in that may not be appealing to their conservative base. And so I urge the Republican legislature, I urge the governor, that we've got to change these laws and we've got to make them fair to not just one particular group, but for all people.
I think it's good politics for the Republicans, because they don't want to keep getting put in this impossible position. Let's find another way to do this. And look, I would disagree that Republicans in any way want to impinge on anyone's First Amendment rights. And I think Republicans need to reform how we govern Liberty Plaza so they're not put in this impossible position anymore, and we maintain its reason for being, which is First Amendment expression. But Republicans this week, when asked about these student protests, even though they disagree with the policy prescriptions put forward by these students, put out statements of tolerance and acceptance and celebrated the First Amendment exercise that these students are engaging in and participating in our democracy. They handled it the right way, these Republican leaders in our state did.
And very quickly, Theron, I'll start with you on this. That walkout was striking by the students across the country. Here in Georgia, does it turn into anything other than perhaps mobilized future voters?
You had teachers, parents, and students coming together, peacefully kneeling and walking out of their schools. And then what was so gratifying for me, Dennis, is that these young people had a message. They had a message that was directed at the President of the United States and at the Governor of Georgia and all our congressional members and our state and local government officials. And that is that these young people are demanding action. And I believe that if you look at the history of movements in this country, whether it's the Civil Rights Movement, the Tea Party Movement, it's always been a combination of young people motivated by a particular issue, something happened or something dealing with equality, coupled with policy arguments that certain politicians will use as an opportunity to bring together their constituency and to move a progressive agenda forward. I think this is the new civil rights issue of our time, and I think these young people are fired up and they're not going away.
I don't know that it's going to translate directly. For whatever reason, the Parkland shooting had an impact that other just as horrific shootings didn't. This has mobilized people in a way that shows that the nation is at a breaking point. I don't think that you have to be for gun control to be very upset by what's happening in our country. I think, if anything, what it has accomplished is consciousness raising and up the stakes for finding solutions. And Donald Trump is out there talking about solutions too. He thinks out loud a lot and then has to reverse course.
He has changed his mind on some
things. But that's his method. We see him do that on issue after issue. But Republicans are talking about it too. And I think you're not going to see Republicans coming forward with gun control measures, but we are going to be looking at ways that we can secure schools and quote unquote harden them so that it's not sitting ducks in a classroom.
We've looked at what's going to be happening outside the Capitol. Just ahead, a look at what will be going on inside the Capitol, some buzzer beaters or gavel beaters as they race toward the finish in the legislature. That's coming up just ahead.
You love free, and at Ameris Bank, so do we. That's why we're proud to offer worry-free, hassle-free Ameris Bank free checking. Manage your money your way with convenient access to digital, mobile, and telephone banking, all with no monthly service fee or minimum balance requirements. At Ameris Bank, we're with you. For more information or to open an account, visit our local bankers in person or online at amerisbank.com/free checking. Other fees such as overdraft fees may apply. Ameris Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
We are back with the Political Breakfast. Democratic strategist Theron Johnson and Republican Brian Robinson are here. I'm Dennis O'Hare. The legislature is in the same kind of home stretch that the NCAA basketball tournament is, trying to beat the clock with gavel beaters, if you will. Theron, let's start with you. We've been talking about gun safety and some of the protests against gun violence, but the legislature is in the middle of closing one loophole, which applies to folks who have mental illnesses and could be dangerous. And that bill has passed the House and is now in the Senate. So as we look ahead toward what might pass and what might not in the final days, you think that one's going to make it?
Well, Georgia listened to what President Trump said. President Trump encouraged states to act now in their capacity to try to basically make sure that they have stronger gun laws that prevent people who clearly have a mental illness, people who have been documented on the list, to make sure that they don't have access to guns. And so, again, I commend the legislature, I commend Democrats and Republicans for acting under the president's order to basically get a bill that basically says that people who are being expunged from the list, people who have been identified with a mental disorder or a mental illness, that they're just not expunged and then they're able to go buy guns. And so this bill basically will make sure that that law is strengthened, to make sure that there's oversight, make sure that we keep up with these people after 5 years, and make sure that they don't have easy access to guns.
Does this bill make it real quick?
I think it does, because I think that this governor and the Republican leadership understand that this is a national issue, and Georgia definitely want to take some proactive measures.
I don't know. And part of it is because there are some Republicans who are concerned, I think legitimately so, about how do you define a mental illness that disqualifies you from a constitutional right. That's really tricky.
Right, now, because everyone who has a mental illness is potentially dangerous, and that's
right. And of course, it's a scale. I mean, there's people who are completely detached from reality, and people who function normally much of the time, but still suffer from mental health issues that can make them dangerous at different times. So, it's tricky when it comes to the definition. I think. For me personally, there are a lot of people that I don't want to have guns, but I can't make that list up. So that's where it's tricky. And I think Republicans should be commended also for putting in millions more for school security systems that will allow us to protect against school shooters.
Let's get predictions from each of you for bills that will come right down to the wire that will get the most attention, and whether you think they'll make it or not as everybody rushes out and starts to campaign for reelection. Brian, we'll start with you.
Very serious about getting the transit bill passed that will create some sort of regional approach to transit. I think there's going to be changes in the bill as it stands now. I think it's probably going to be more narrowly tailored than the 13-county region. Some of those 13 counties really don't want to be in a mass transit region. So let's focus on the ones that do. I think that is the pathway for success for transit. Obviously, Gwinnett is a great example. They want to be a part of this. And I think getting them in is a major coup, a major step forward. So,
and pleasing
them,
Cobb will be a big negotiating point.
You know, Cobb is very split on this.
Yeah.
There is consensus. We need mass transit moving into Cobb, but not consensus on where it should go. So that's a little trickier. But another good example of how this needs to be narrowly tailored. Rural broadband is something that's – there's going to be some broadband bill that is passed. Right now, you've got a lot of interest groups who are at the table trying to get to an agreement. There's a lot of give and take still to be done on both sides on that issue.
The first bill, which we just discussed, is definitely got to make sure that closing this loophole with people who have actually been identified with mental illness, who's on the list, to make sure they're not being expunged, to limit their access to having guns. I think the second bill that I'm watching is a bill that was recently introduced by State Senator Fran Miller. This is a controversial issue in the county of DeKalb, where county commissioners are trying to give themselves a 60% pay raise. And so what Fran Miller—
he wants to either cap or say, look, you know, you guys can't do this quite this way.
Correct. And then what CEO Michael Thurman had the ordinance at his desk, he did not veto it. One of the reasons why he didn't is that it was a full investigation of whether it actually complied with the county's charter. And did it actually comply with state law? And so that's one of the ones to watch, because I think that Senator Miller is a Republican who represents a changing district in DeKalb County, which is the most Democratic county in the state of Georgia. So those will be the two that I would keep an eye on.
And Theron, on the transit bill, you have said on this broadcast you want to make sure that MARTA has an equitable stake in whatever comes out. We talked about pleasing Cobb County, the suburban part of this. What about Fulton and DeKalb?
Well, I thought it was very interesting that my good friend Brian left out DeKalb County. You know, he lives in his three-car garage with a manicured lawn in the city of
Brookhaven. I live a mile from a MARTA station, probably closer than Theron does.
I think we're about the same distance. But no, not only DeKalb County, but also Clayton County. And you got to make sure that the city of Atlanta is protected, because this, look, it's definitely a transit religion that has come over Speaker Ralston and Lieutenant Governor Casey Cagle. They have been staunch advocates of getting something done in the session. But we got to make sure that, number one, MARTA still has the flexibility and the ability to continue to be an efficiently run authority, to make sure that they're not penalized. And then also to make sure that while it's all this sort of enthusiasm to get Gwinnett and Cobb to come to the party, make sure that you don't penalize people like Fulton, DeKalb, Clayton, and Atlanta that have been for many decades, I think over 50 years, been paying into our transit system. So I believe that State Senator Brandon Beach and State Representative Kevin Tanner, will do the right thing, continue to have open and honest conversations with some of these officials who represent these counties.
Quick yes or no on this. A couple of bills that got a lot of attention when they were proposed or at least considered. One, a bill to allow the state to take over Atlanta's airport. And another, a hate crimes bill. Doesn't look like either of those is going to make it unless they're tacked on as some sort of surprise. Do you anticipate surprise consideration of either of those, or are they done for the year?
Let me say, I don't think anybody is talking about the Atlanta airport takeover bill but Dennis O'Hare. You're the only person that I've heard bring that up, really.
Mayor Bottoms felt it important to go down there and talk about it.
Yeah, Mayor Bottoms has got some other issues she needs to probably take care of. Let's get to those with some staff who are part of the old regime that have some legal issues going on right now. But let's get to that. Let me say on things that are still out there. That bill's not going anywhere. The hate crimes bill has an important helper in Wendell Willard. He's Judiciary Committee Chair. This is his last session. He's retiring this year. He wants to see it passed. Representative Megan Hansen from Brookhaven, has a Republican, has been the sponsor of that. It could still get attached to something. Along those lines, it looks like the gay adoption bill that was passed in the Senate won't get a hearing in the House and won't be.
This was the bill that would allow agencies which have fundamental religious beliefs as part of their foundation to refuse to work with gay couples. That bill, you say, is not going anywhere.
That's right. And that's what it appears. And it looks like we have some constitutional amendments that haven't really gotten much coverage but could get the requisite two-thirds majorities and go to the ballot next year. One would give crime victims a Bill of Rights and the Constitution for the first time. And another would create a fund for preservation of lands and conservation. So those are moving through the process now, too.
Democrats and Republicans came together to stop Senator Burt Jones' baseless attempt to create a state authority to run the world's busiest airport. I think that bill is dead. However, we got to keep an eye on it, because there have been some talks at the Capitol about creating an actual study committee. So they want to keep this going, because this is always the one item that the Republicans want to show us how conservative they are, that they use at the beginning of the session. On the hate crimes bill, there's another bill, and a person I want to shout out is State Representative Karen Bennett from DeKalb County. And so there's been a lot of talk about bringing those two bills together. She's working across the aisle, working with her caucus, of course, in the Democratic caucus, but she's also working with Republicans. And so I truly believe that hate crimes in the state of Georgia, particularly in the metro region, we've got to have stronger laws to make sure that people, number one, don't commit them, but if they do, that they're punished, and this type of behavior and this type of discriminatory acts cannot be done to anyone.
Two things. One, I have a problem with hate crimes legislation, not because I'm pro-hate crime, but because I am anti-jury determining what was going on inside someone's head. It is a very dangerous legal limbo, in my opinion. I think we address that like this. If you beat somebody up, if you kill somebody, if you in any way harm a person because of their race or their sexual identity or their sexual preference or their religion, you should go to prison for that offense, for whatever you did to them, and if you kill them, you should get the death penalty. And it doesn't matter what your motive is, you should be punished harshly if you commit violent crimes. And I don't think it should matter why you did it. There shouldn't be a separate category. And two, Theron briefly mentioned Fran Miller's bill. What it would do is not allow county commissioners throughout the state, not just DeKalb, this would apply statewide, to give themselves raises. It would set it to where they can vote for a raise for the next commission after the next election. It's how Congress works. It's how county commissions should work. It's how the state legislature should work. It's good policy.
Moving to Atlanta's City Hall. One of the communications staffers for the former administration is under investigation anyway, because of a series of texts that, at least in the eyes of those who have sounded alarms about it, seem to tell city staff to go slow, to drag their feet on a Freedom of Information request. Theron, in terms of this administration, the Keisha Lance Bottoms administration, does this investigation, A, slow it down at all in terms of what it wants to do, and B, send a message as to how to handle things in the future?
Mayor Bottoms' chief of staff released a very specific statement this week that addressed two issues. One, they came out and said that they're going to fully cooperate with the Georgia Bureau of Investigations and the state attorney general's office in this investigation. But more importantly, Dennis, she took a step forward and she said that she's going to put together an internal investigation that is going to look at the protocols, what are the rules currently within City Hall to make sure that people are not only getting back to reporters or anyone who files open records requests, but she's also going to make sure that there's a process in place to make sure that everyone complies with it, to make sure that folks are understanding that this law that says you've got to get back to them in a reasonable matter of time. But to make sure that the city of Atlanta actually has a process in place that all departments will follow. I do not think that Mayor Bottoms should be accused of any lack of transparency because of acts that were done by employees of the former administration. Okay, so this is Mayor Bottoms. She's there. She's the 60th mayor. Anything that was done during the term of the 59th mayor, Mayor Bottoms should not be criticized for that. This is a woman who's come in, who said that she's going to be transparent, and she's been doing that. This is a mayor who has came in, who's basically put together a really good transition team to make sure that the public sees how she's interacting and how she wants to govern the city. And so while it's bad, yes, it's very unfortunate that these employees who were involved in this unfortunate activity, they have to go through this. But I do think that I want to commend the mayor for taking this very seriously and for acting on it and to make sure that she puts internal measures in place of how people have got to respond to open records requests in a reasonable time manner.
I want to commend Theron for not spinning this, because he would have been spinning garbage can lids. This is such an egregious case of a violation of state law. At first, when I saw the text messages, I thought some clever lawyer is going to come in and say that the press secretary for former Mayor Reed did not demand that the bureaucrats not turn over information. She just sort of muddied the waters, slowed it down, and so that it wasn't a crime being committed. Upon further examination, however, I discovered that the law strictly forbids frustrating the process. This clearly meets that definition. There's no wiggle room. This is a violation. The GBI is investigating it. Chris Carr, the Attorney General, has stepped in to look at it as well. There's got to be a prosecution put forward, or our open records laws are meaningless. It will send a clear precedent that you do not have to abide by these laws if this isn't punished, and it needs to be done in a high-profile way. Let me tell you, this is one of those tip-of-the-iceberg situations. When you have open records violations, it is because you were hiding something much deeper and much worse, and there is some, there was some deep corruption in the department that was being looked at, and this is evidence that there's more to come.
Finally, and to end on a note that probably will please both of you, back to the legislature, one bill that has now made it is headed for the governor's desk, the brunch bill. You can now, if the governor signs this piece of legislation, have your mimosa a little bit earlier in the morning instead of early in the afternoon on Sundays at your favorite watering hole.
I want to commend every single person who worked so hard to make sure that this bill was passed. This is good for small businesses. This is good for our state. This is good for people who now, between the hours of 11:30 and beyond, will be able to partake in a little libation and to basically make sure that they can have a drink. But Brian wants us to believe that he's in church in that time. But a person on Twitter corrected him a few weeks ago and told him that being a Republican and going to church are not mutually inclusive. And so I hope that you will have a drink with me, Brian, on a Sunday pretty soon where you're not in church.
Well, I celebrate this bill, too, even though let me correct the record from 2 weeks ago that Theron said I love to enjoy a cocktail on Sunday mornings. I am, in fact, a teetotaler, and that is absolute God's honest truth. But I celebrate freedom and liberty for others. If they choose to drink on Sunday morning, that should be their right. I love that this is local control, and this is going to be decided by local groups. If it's something they want, they should be able to have it. And I think that's the direction our country is going in. You're already seeing with marijuana laws being loosened dramatically. Not to compare the two directly, but eventually, I think by 2030, you're going to have fully legalized marijuana pretty much all across the country. That's not me stating a personal preference. It's me looking at a trend line.
And that's it for this week's Political Breakfast. I'm Dennis O'Hare. We've been joined again today by Democratic strategist Theron Johnson and Republican strategist Brian Robinson. Thank you both for stopping by again.
Enjoy March Madness.
And go Connor Lamb.
And our thanks to producer Sam Whitehead. Now, if you like this show, subscribe, and you can do that easily wherever you get your podcasts, and be sure to rate us. That's a great way to make sure that other people can find us. We'll be back in your feed soon, and of course in your head, with more nourishing political conversation. Be sure to join us. We got a place for you.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.